Aviation is at a crossroads. Like other industries before it, it's now found business models that can be both environmentally and economically sustainable all at once.
Fundamentally, we see a lot of change, or we have seen a lot of change in the market and the geopolitical situation in the world this year. But one thing that is constant is Atlas's and our customers' sustainability ambitions.
This is Business Insights, a podcast brought to you by global strategy consultancy Roland Berger.
So welcome to this Business Insights Roland Berger podcast. Today we have the pleasure of having Richard Brookman and Catherine Preston from Atlas Air joining us to talk about sustainability in air cargo. It's a leading space. It's really demonstrating how sustainability can be rolled out at scale. And we're very, very excited to hear the insights directly from Richard and Catherine. So without further ado, I'd love to hand over to Richard and then Catherine for maybe a few introductory words.
Thanks, Nico. My name is Richard Brookman. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at Atlas Air. I'm also the Head of Sustainability. And it may sound like a weird combination, the commercial side and the sustainability side combined. Of course, the one side is trying to get more customers, more business. And the other side is trying to make our business as sustainable as possible and reduce our emissions where we can. But to us, it makes a lot of sense because sustainability is twofold. It's important to us because it's the right thing to do. But the second part is because it's our customers that are increasingly interested in solutions that help them decarbonize their supply chain. So combining it actually makes a ton of sense. And that's why my team, and not only the sustainability team, but also the wider commercial team, is quite focused on the topic.
And thanks for inviting us, Nikhil. My name is Catherine Preston. I'm our Staff Vice President of Sustainability, reporting to Richard on the commercial team. And I've been with Atlas for a little over a year, helping to further develop our sustainability program and implement it across the enterprise. And I'll just echo what Richard said, that so much of what we do is customer-focused and helping them achieve their goals. It's the right thing to do, but they also are getting, you know, input from their customers in turn that they want to reduce the environmental footprint of the products that they're buying. So that's really important for us and our network. And although we are in our commercial group within Atlas, I will say it's a small, lean, but mighty team because we work very closely with colleagues across the company in communications and legal and operations and finance and accounting and every department you could think of to implement our broad range of sustainability initiatives. So we have a lot going on that we're really excited about to talk with you and give you some details, but also a long way to go. So it's a kind of a process of continuous improvement.
So Nicole, maybe before we continue, it might be good to give a quick background on what Atlas Air does, of course, for the listeners. We're an airline, right? As Catherine already alluded to, and that might be clear, but we're a bit different than most when you think of airlines and how we work. We don't sell seats to passengers, for example. We don't even sell pockets of space to individual customers. What we do is really work on long-term agreements with customers, and we see ourselves really as powering our customer supply chains. We become an integral part of the supply chain for large manufacturing companies or forwarding logistics companies, to make sure that their supply chain from typically the production locations to consumer locations will work smoothly and as efficiently as possible. And as such, we're actually the second largest capacity provider, or cargo capacity provider in the world, right after FedEx.
Thank you both. And I mean, it really seems like not only are you trendsetting here, but you're bringing the value chain along with you, which is quite a fascinating approach. You're talking about your customers, but your customers' customers as well, which is a fascinating way of looking at the challenge here. What exactly is your ambition when it comes to decarbonization, reducing your climate footprint? Maybe a question starting with you, Catherine.
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's no doubt that air freight definitely produces a lot of emissions as we fly a very large fleet of freighters around the world. We operate at over 300 airports, over 80 countries in the world for our customers. And as Richard said, we're always looking to kind of grow that customer base. So we do a lot of flying, which is great. But that in turn consumes a lot of fuel and produces a lot of emissions. So we do have a pretty big focus on our emissions footprint in the sustainability group. And our ambition is to cut carbon by 20% by 2035 from our baseline, which was 2021. And we support the industry's net zero by 2050, that goal that's for the broader industry. And that is both of those targets are quite ambitious for a hard to decarbonize sector like aviation. And again, as I said, we fly, you know, larger aircraft with, in many cases, if we're talking about the 747, we've got four engines. So we look at everything across the board. How can we get those emissions reductions? So we have a number of operational efficiency measures that we're currently looking at piloting and implementing on the ground and in the air, how we fly the aircraft. We are, like every airline, right, looking at fleet renewal. So how can we get newer, more efficient aircraft? Each generation of aircraft is, in many cases, 20, 30 or more percent more fuel efficient than those that it's replacing. But that takes time. And there are delays in the supply chain. If any of your listeners have been paying attention to that, which I bet they have, you know, the OEMs have struggled a bit. And then we have emissions regulatory programs we comply with, things like CORSIA, where we will be purchasing carbon offsets for emissions from international aviation. And then there's the SAF mandates. And then really the big piece for us is a sustainable aviation fuel on the voluntary market. So we look at all these baskets of measures, and it's not only what we can do, right? It's what our customers can do and how accurate they forecast their cargo so we can put the correct amount of fuel on the aircraft. It's about air traffic control and continuing improvements there, where you have air navigation service providers trying to develop more efficient routes, and we would love to see more of that. And we collaborate, as a carrier, we collaborate with these authorities as well. So it's really an all of the above approach, because there's no way to get there without doing all of that. But I would say SAF is certainly the biggest lever we can pull to achieve those emissions reductions, at least in the midterm.
In that sense, we do a little bit different. Since we're so in integrated with our customers and what they do, it's really important for us to think together with our customers on how to reduce emissions, how can we be more efficient. But we also can work with our customers to find more efficient routes, even if that means that we fly a bit less, because that might be in the best interest for our customers. And of course, with an aim to decarbonize. Other initiatives like SAF, again, we very much take a very active approach together with our customers to pursue opportunities there as well. So I thought it would be important to get a bit of a background there. We definitely are a bit of a different brand, and we work a little slightly different than people are used to.
Thank you very much. And really, really fascinating. Maybe before we continue, just one comment, you know, based on the kind of work that we've been doing with clients across industries in sustainability. And I'd love your thoughts on this. Quite often what we see is that the industries that feel the most pressure to decarbonize, to kind of demonstrate a real action on climate change, tend to be the ones which are closer to the end consumer. B2C companies, because they're much more visible, they're much more in the public domain, often kind of get that attention more. And as a result, they have more of an impetus. What I find fascinating here is that actually Atlas Air is possibly a brand which is pushing from the other side, is really bringing the rest of the value chain along on that journey. To what extent have you found it easy or difficult to raise these ideas and improvements with your customers? What challenges have you faced, and where has that been easier or harder?
So I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it starts with the customers, right? And it starts with the consumers, who are the ones that are driving behavior, and that's also where we see the biggest attraction. It's with the closer our direct customers are close are to their consumers, the more likely it is that they're very interested in providing, having a strong focus on sustainability, on decarbonization. Like, for example, our first SAF project was with Inditex, the mother company of Zara. And again, that's really driven by their consumers. Very often the younger generation, still liking like in cloth, but also being more and more concerned of the footprint of the things they buy. So the more, the closer the company is to the consumer, the more likely it is that they're very interested in that. I think a second one is higher end companies. Right? The higher end brands are the ones that also are take the forefront here, partially because a brand is that exactly. It's a brand. It's an image, and the higher end, the more value you want to get out of that brand. And I think sustainability can play a part there as well. So if you look at technology companies like Apple, very strict and very aggressive targets. So with net zero by 2030, Microsoft, same thing. They want to be net carbon negative by 2030 as well. Both rely significantly still on overseas production, and their high-end products, they really need to go by air. The value is too great to ship them on the ocean, put them on the exposed to sea air, etc. So yeah, going by air, it makes sense. And if you look at it, the cost per product for air freight is not so high, and hence the slightly additional cost for air freight using, for example, sustainable aviation fuel is also quite easily absorbed by the higher end products that you can ship. But there's others that are, of course, a little bit further behind. Geographically, we see Europe being in the forefront. The US is kind of a little bit lesser, but also moving in the right direction, again, depending on the company. And I think in Asia, typically, it's a bit farther behind. But even there, awareness is increasing really, really quickly. And I think where right now we see a lot of talk still, talk does predate action. So I expect a lot of action coming from the Asian customers as well in the not so distant future.
Thank you for sharing that. Really, really, really fascinating. And the impact that you can have as a player enabling this is, I think, huge. But perhaps another challenge that we're currently facing is the fact that 2025 is kind of a unique year in recent memory. It presents a pretty tough geopolitical climate, especially. And given your position as, you know, basically connecting the world, one of the few companies really at the forefront of globalization in that way, especially from an air cargo perspective, you're obviously also highly exposed to a lot of what's been happening in 2025. How is Atlas navigating this landscape while continuing to decarbonize? And what lessons would you draw for other operators trying to follow in your footsteps?
Look, yeah, there's a lot of talking about turmoil, right? There's a lot of focus on trade. There's a lot of new policies that are really kind of designed to limit trade. Who would have known that the new US administration were taking climate change so seriously that they tried to stop all trade and all air movements and all ocean trade to reduce emissions? Joking aside, look, what's happening has a big impact, of course. Big barriers to trade, large tariffs. They clearly have an impact. At the same time, after a couple months into this, you can see that, first of all, the world doesn't change overnight, right? It's not something that you can turn it off. You can maybe speak to trade and like, hey, well, we have to make it in America, but that's not the reality anymore. A lot of, even if you manufacture products in the US, components are often coming from somewhere else, and that's okay, because you can actually manufacture the most efficient way if you get the products where they're made most efficiently. And if some products are made better in and more efficiently and maybe with less energy consumption in China or in Europe, then that's a good thing. So I think trade will not go away. And you can see that already. Despite massive tariffs, we continue to see demand quite strong. Yes, there has been some shifts. So production lines, they moved from China to Southeast Asia. They readjust a little bit. Sometimes it just means that halfway manufactured products are made in China. They get moved over to another country and then finalized there for final assembly. So trade will not go away. So it's a lot of noise. That's one side of the noise, right? The other part is, of course, all the policy around sustainability and kind of the administration seeming to make this into kind of a, yeah, the boogeyman. You cannot even allowed to talk about it anymore. It's removed. You can remove all you want, but this is a trend. Governments, they change. Trends, they tend to stick around a lot longer. And I think the world is going on a path where more and more people are realizing that climate change and how we treat the world is a real thing. It's a real problem, and we need to work together to solve that. Just like I mentioned, that part of our journey is driven by our customers, and it's really driven by our customers' customers. Those consumers, to a large extent, are not suddenly going to change their behavior because there's one end of station in the world that says that climate change is not real. They all know it is. So I think the demand continues. There might even be a stronger push where individuals and corporations take a larger responsibility to driving this forward. And we see it even within states in the U.S. that there's different approaches. And also some of the red states are quite interested in topic and see it as important and see it also as an economic opportunity in the long run.
Yeah. And I would just add, really kind of echoing what Richard said, that the current geopolitical environment is unpredictable in some ways. There's a lot of turmoil. Even the past few days, things have gotten even more complex with what's going on in the Middle East with Iran. And so I think one constant is actually change with politics, with policies, with governments, as Richard said. And we have to be flexible and adaptable. One thing I haven't seen, while we may have a short-term focus on other things, I have not had any of our customers walk back their sustainability targets or say, you know, we're scrapping it all together. That's not happened. It might just be talking about things in a different way or, again, you know, maybe have a different short-term focus, but all those long-term goals that are in place that require industry-wide cooperation, long-term decision-making, particularly when it comes to SAF, for example, all that work is still happening, and it is being driven by the consumer, by customers, by companies that have these targets and are committed to them.
Thank you so much. I mean, it does seem that it's heartening to hear this. We at RB are, of course, working tooth and nail to continue pushing on sustainability, on decarbonization, on these long-term topics. But you know, the short term does take its toll. So it's really heartening to hear that you too kind of have this long-term view. Maybe the last kind of big area for discussion today is to deep dive a little bit into what you, Catherine, earlier called one of your biggest levers, right? So sustainable aviation fuel. Obviously, it's a nascent sector. From public sources, the production of SAF last year was less than 0.5% of all global jet fuel. This year, it's expected to be somewhere between 0.7% and 1%. It still remains small, even though actually the growth in production is pretty rapid. But the SAF market is also going through a lot of its own turmoil. A lot of it was actually already ongoing well before the latest trends in geopolitics. It's two completely different sets of turmoil, let's say. So this nascent sector, which is having its own challenges, how do you think it will evolve through this market uncertainty with, you know, potentially sustainability itself taking maybe a little bit of a hit and ultimately the business case for SAF being always a little bit challenging?
Yeah, I'll start and Richard can weigh in as well. So you're right that it's been SAF makes up a very small percent of global jet fuel production and consumption. But you're also right, if you look at historically how that has changed over the last 5 to 10 years, it has been that classic hockey stick graph where you have really, really slow ramp up. And in the past few years, that production has increased. It's more than doubled, you know, the past couple of years. And that's great. But let's be clear-eyed about, you know, how far we have yet to go. The U.S. had the prior administration articulated a 3 billion gallon SAF goal by 2030. I know other countries have targets. And while we've made tremendous progress, we are kind of at an inflection point where you've got changing policy potentially in the U.S. We're waiting to see what comes out of this big tax bill, tax and spending bill that's currently winding its way through Congress. At the same time, you see other countries imposing, the EU and the UK first, SAF mandates, but others are in the works or are coming in future years. And so I think we have a ways to go to see how all of these things play together to impact production and supply and price. And then the other point you made, which is with all the market turmoil, SAF can be made from a number of different feedstocks, but those prices fluctuate as well. So on the, for the producer side, having to source, whether it's a used cooking oil-based fuel or agricultural or forestry waste, these are commodities and those prices fluctuate. And there's a tremendous amount of capital that's needed to build new projects and new facilities and infrastructure. And I don't mean infrastructure on the airport or the fueling pipelines of the aircraft. It's all drop-in. I mean, in terms of actually making the fuel. So we've seen a lot of progress, but there are a lot of questions. And I think what we advocate for is strong incentives. We would, you know, prefer the carrot over the stick. So if there are tax incentives, in the U.S., there's federal currently and state level. So producers can layer on the different incentives to bring that cost down for the buyer. And then again, you've got the kind of the regulatory approach that we're seeing roll out in the EU and the UK right now with ReFuel EU. And I understand what they're trying to do there. There's some hiccups, I'll say, in how that's being rolled out, some things that we'd like to see improved, but they're two different approaches. So we really advocate for strong kind of economic policies on the incentive side, making, you know, giving SAF that level playing field that it needs compared to, say, renewable diesel or other types of biofuels so that the producers are incentivized to make SAF. And the market's there. You know, we want to buy it. Our customers want us to buy it, but it's just too challenging to buy it when it's 3-4+ times the cost of conventional jet fuel. So I think our customers, certainly the market has shown willingness to pay a premium, but there is a limit for how high of a premium we are able to afford and what's cost effective. And then one last thing I'll say in terms of kind of where does SAF go from here, I think back to the point Richard made about trade. For SAF, it's the same as any other product. You know, we can buy SAF from anywhere in the world. We have a global network. That's the good news. So if there's a producer in the Asia Pacific region, if there's producers in the US, if there's producers anywhere, if they're making a product that meets our requirements and it's got a better price, of course, that's where we're going to buy it. And then we're also trying to, you know, incentivize, or I should say partner with entities to make SAF feasible where we operate the most. So a great example is in Alaska. The state of Alaska has invested a lot of time and energy doing a feasibility study, looking at different feedstocks in the state, looking at their infrastructure, looking at two different production pathways to see, is it feasible to have a SAF facility in Anchorage? Yes, it is. But, you know, kind of where they go from here. And that's where companies like Atlas can partner with them to show the demand, to advocate for policies to help make that happen. Including supporting, for example, a grant application the state had put in for a fast SAF grant to do some of this work. So that's really encouraging that we see the state that has a Republican governor that, you know, is really all in and trying to make SAF a viable industry for that state, for, you know, adding jobs and infrastructure and supporting their the companies that operate out of Anchorage. So, yeah.
So look, I think just to add to what Catherine already said, and I think you phrase it right? There's a lot of uncertainty in the market, and there's a lot of uncertainty around how SAF will evolve. And so I'm not going to pretend that I know how it will, but maybe more talk about how I hope, or how I hope people will see it. Because if you look at SAF now and the number of projects that are out there that are under development around the world, a fairly large share, the largest share, is US-based. And that's still where the most projects are planned. That has a lot to do with the Inflation Reduction Act and the incentives that Catherine already talked about that really encourages development. So if you now have an administration that is claiming that they're so focused on trying to bring manufacture to the U.S., bring leadership to the United States, for example, to me, it doesn't make sense to cut down on these new technology projects, these new technology opportunities, where SAF is one of them. There's a lot of opportunity to create jobs, long-term jobs, right? In a new industry that with the right investment will provide a benefit to the industry, but provide a benefit to communities, provide jobs to workers, etc. And you can see that this is not a red or blue question. There's quite a few red states, so to speak, that also see that and actually have their own projects. Quite a few are based in in those typically red states. So I hope that's recognized, and that it's recognized that if you put investment in the right locations and in the right products, where we know there will be a demand for it in the future, it's not going to go away. It's going to increase. It just makes sense from a business perspective. And if that resonates a little bit, I think we'll see SaaS development picking up from where it is now and maybe accelerating. Of course, then we have the rest of the world, right? The rest of the world is just as important and maybe even becomes now even a lot more important, because if the US does slow down, there might be actually an opportunity for the rest of the world seeing the exact same thing. Like, hey, here's an opportunity for us to jump into space because the United States is not. They're actually cutting down. As an example, Asia, I think, could be a really big location. They're maybe a little bit behind, but if you look at a country like China and how they went full on in the electrical vehicle business and really took a leadership role there, they see it as an opportunity. It's a new opportunity, new technology. Where did they invest? They invested right there. And they're the leaders on the EV space. It's not Tesla, it's BYD. It's a Chinese company at the moment, right? So I think in SAF, you probably have similar opportunities. And I think other countries and other regions will recognize that, and they will see the opportunity to invest. And I think we're going to see a lot more projects coming out. On the technology side, things over time, they always improve, right? The production becomes more efficient. It's a fairly new industry. Yes, some of the processes are older, but it's still quite new. So there's probably a lot of efficiency to be had and ways to reduce costs. And as costs come down, look, on that side, with technology and the development, the cost will come down on producing sustainable aviation fuel. The cost on conventional oil will over time go up. Maybe it's not right now, but as demand and as it becomes harder and harder to find fossil fuels and pump it up, the cost will go up on that side. So in the long run, this is the right space to invest in. And I think for us, it's really important to be at the forefront of that as well.
Thank you for saying that, and really, really fascinating to see this. I mean, through our work, we've noted our work with SAF producers. We've noted that, you know, every doubling of a plant's capacity typically results in a double digit reduction in unit cost of production. We see that globally, if you compare the planned projects versus the existing kind of production sites, the ones in the pipeline are more than double the size. So, you know, at a structural level, there is this massive shift happening over the next few years, assuming these production sites go ahead. But I think what's out of what you said, Richard and Catherine, what's most exciting for us is this comparison against some of the other industries that might be slightly more mature on sustainability. Each of those, whether it's in green energy or whether it's in EVs, each of those sectors succeeded when there was a clear business case. And, you know, it was economically sustainable to also decarbonize. And that's what, you know, we see when we look at SAF now. It's becoming more and more economically sustainable in addition to being sustainable from an environmental perspective. So exciting times and wonderful to hear that's how you're seeing the market as well.
Thanks, Nikhil, for inviting us on this podcast. I think it's a very interesting discussion. It's a very important topic, very important to Atlas, very important to Ronald Berger. Very important to the world, to be honest. So I really enjoyed the conversation and looking forward to the next opportunity to talk about this together in the future.
I will say, I think it's important to note that while we are doing a lot of things as a company to address our emissions and our overall environmental footprint, and we're doing a lot of social sustainability initiatives too for the community that we didn't get into today, I think all that work is really important, but it's also important to acknowledge that these measures take time, and we haven't, you know, we're not going to see overnight results, that these are investments that are really long-term. And the fleet renewal is a great example. We have, you know, aircraft that we are going to be adding to the fleet or replacing retiring aircraft. And those plans go out 10 plus years. And that's how long it takes. You can't just snap your fingers and, you know, buy all the SAF you need, or snap your fingers and you know, replace all of your aging aircraft with new aircraft. So I would just note that while we have big ambitions and we're doing a lot to get there, it's the long game. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And so we're really encouraged by the groundwork that we're laying and that what we see industry doing. And we really feel very optimistic that we will get there. Just the tremendous amount of thought and effort and investment that we and our partners and our customers are making is very, it's heartening to see. So, yeah, stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to Business Insights by Roland Berger. Roland Berger is a leading global strategy consultancy. Our full-line service portfolio spans across all key industries and business functions. Established in 1967 in Munich, we are renowned for driving transformation, innovation, and business performance around the world. For more information, visit our website at rolandberger.com.